أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الأطيبين الأنجبين بهم نتولى ومن أعدائهم نتبرأ إلى الله اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك توغا وتمتعه فيها طويلا Regarding the secrets of success, it was mentioned yesterday that among those factors which play a part in one's success is that we have to start from a small scale, from a low scale. Even though the ambitions, the ideas, the plans, they may be large, but to start them, we should start them on a lower level. For example, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam has a plan for the entire humanity. Now today the adherents of Islam are more than 1 billion Muslims. It took about 23 years for the Quran to be revealed, and in the initial stages when Rasulullah starts his mission, he says that the only thing which we will be applying, it's say shahadatain, that's it. Say la ilaha illallah Muhammadun Rasulullah, and that's it. For a duration of time, nothing else. And as the ahkam were being revealed, slowly people were being educated, people were being taught. And it took such a long time. And today you see that after 1400 years, we find that the plan of Rasulullah, which started on a lower scale, a very low scale, it has flourished the entire globe. Now the same teaching is to someone, for example, who embraces and becomes a Muslim. From the first day, we don't ask him to do all those things that we are doing. He says shahadatain, that is sufficient. Then let him go and study and slowly go towards prayers, taharat and fast, etc. If you burden him with all of these ahkam, all of a sudden it's going to backfire and he's going to go back to square one. So that again, among the means of success is that we have to be slow and start on a lower scale. The other factor which plays an important part in this success is that we don't listen to anyone and everyone. At the same time, there has to be this mashwarat, this consultation. We have to consult others. That is, refrain from uncalculated success, that what is not related to our field, we must not enter. Also try not to copy others. Not everyone is alike. Allah Jalla wa Ala, He hasn't made two persons alike in this entire creation. So maybe there is a talent in me, it might not be in the other person. There might be something special in him, it might not be present in me. So whatsoever Allah has given us, we have to thank Him, we have to be grateful to Him. And based upon those abilities and the talents that He has given to us, we have to work. And if, for example, a talent wasn't present in me, and I work against it, now there's a shortfall in my performance. For that I will be copying other people, trying to match them. That would result in jealousy, in pride, and it's all these unwanted diseases that we are inviting and giving birth to. In this regard, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, he says that says that people, they are of three kinds. Either a person is a scholar, or he is a student, or says that sometimes it's people who go after every unknown issue, like mosquitoes, who are flown away, driven away from one side to the other, without any goal, without any aim. They are just wandering around, one direction to the other. So they, instead of blossoming their talents, they kill their talents, and they are always in search of support of others to rest, and they become dependent on others. And that too, it's not acceptable. Now the other factor which plays an important part again in this field of success is to consult others. Quran also emphasizes on this, says that وَشَاوِرْهُمْ فِي الْأَمْرِ, that is, instructions are given to Rasulullah by Allah, that you consult them. Or when it comes to mu'mineen, consult them. When you have to consult each other. So consulting doesn't mean that we totally become dependent on the person who we are consulting. Your talent is different. Whatsoever you want to do, you do. Only it's on those troubleshooting areas where we need help, seek assistance, and whatever advice is being given to you, analyze it. And if it is something which falls within your expertise, accept it. Now again, if you look into the performance of the Holy Prophet, it's what we learn from him is that in the Battle of Ahzab, the armies of the Arabs, like crickets and swarms in large numbers, they attacked Medina, and Medina was surrounded by these armies. Here the Prophet, he appointed a consultation group and says that you consult each other and see what is best that can be done. And among them, it's Salman al-Farsi. He is among the consultants here, one of the experienced soldiers. He comes up with an idea and says that in many of these spots around Medina, we should make some trenches, and there should be a guard, a group of soldiers guarding these trenches. And whenever we find that the enemy is heading towards Medina, you attack, and that way you will be able to hold back Medina and protect it. Now this idea was accepted, was liked by all of the other consultants in that committee. Rasulullah too accepted it, liked it, and they applied it. It took 25 days for them to build these trenches. And after it was built, 30 days, the enemies, they couldn't enter Medina. And after giving some soldiers of their who were killed, they also had to go away from Medina. So that again was a result of this consultation which took place by Rasulullah. Or for example, in the other wars, the same thing can be seen in the Battle of Uhud, in the Battle of Badr, with a few soldiers and the enemy on the other side fully equipped, endangering Islam. The Prophet says loud, "What is your opinion?" to the soldiers there. "Shall we fight Quraysh or shall we not?" There Miqdad, he stood. He says that, "Ya Rasulullah, our hearts are with you. We are not like the people of Bani Israel, who said to Prophet Musa, 'Musa, you and your God go and fight, and we are sitting over here.'" Here Miqdad says, "Ya Rasulullah, we say that you and your God go and fight, we are with you." So Miqdad's opinion was that. And immediately Sa'd Ma'az, he also stands up, says that, pointing at the Red Sea, says that, "Ya Rasulullah, if you head towards the Red Sea, we are behind you, we are following you." And upon that, when Rasulullah sees that the soldiers are with him and the entire army has strengthened with these views and opinions and by this consultation, he also commands to advance, and they win. So consultation also is among those key factors which plays an important part in this success. It was mentioned that if a person in this field of success, if he has a talent and he doesn't use that talent, depends on other people, he will fall into jealousy. He's lacking a lot, and to top it up, he needs support. He cannot get the right support. His ability is not going to be right. Performance is going to be bad. As a result of that, he will fall into jealousy. Jealousy, again, it's inviting or giving birth to something, a disease, which is one of those dangerous diseases that a person can possess. Quran says that فَاتَّقُ اللَّهُ وَلَا يَحْسُدَنَّ بَعْضُكُمْ بَعْضًا, that you have to be God wary, fear God, observe taqwa, and you must not be jealous of each other. So jealousy is a disease. If there is this jealousy in us, we have to put it aside. We have to work on it. During the time of Prophet Isa, Prophet Isa was with his companions and he was walking. All of a sudden, he comes near a sea, says Bismillah, and starts walking on the sea, on the water. One of his companions who was with him, immediately behind him, he also said Bismillah, and he found himself walking on that water. So they walked quite a distance, and all of a sudden this companion, he says that, what difference is there between me and Isa? He said Bismillah, he walked on that water, he is walking there, and I said the same, and I am walking. The moment he had this idea, that is that jealousy, that what is the difference, we are the same, why do we say that he's better than us, he is the Prophet, he starts drowning. Prophet Isa turns back and says that, what happened, why did you drown? He says, this is what had happened. That is because of that intention of mine, that jealousy of mine which made me drown. So Quran says that, now the reason why he was drowned was because of the wrath, the ghazab of Allah, and that ghazab and that wrath of Allah hit that companion because of that jealousy. So Quran says that فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهِ, that you have to be God wary, وَلَا يَحْسُدَنَّ بَعْضُكُمْ بَعْضًا, and you should not be jealous of each other. Now, if you look into the roots of this jealousy, jealousy, it's wishing that a blessing that Allah has given to an individual, as it was mentioned, that talents are different, abilities are different, performance of mu'mineen, of human beings, it's different. So we can't expect everyone to do the same thing. If that was the case, then it's going to be like these Coca-Cola cans that come out of a factory, everything alike, everyone alike. And that is not going to be possible. So, if these blessings are given to this individual by the grace and mercy of Allah, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, and I wish that blessing which is given to that individual be seized away from him and be given to me, that is jealousy, that is haram. We are not permitted to be jealous of each other. But sometimes I wish and desire that blessing which is with that individual, if it was given to us as well, we would have also been good people. Or for example, if there is a spiritual quality in an individual, we desire that God, that also be given to us. Not that seized away from him, given to me. No, he has it, me too, I also have it. That is okay, that is good. That is known as ghibta. Ghibta, it's allowed. Hasad means seized away from him, given to me. He doesn't possess, I possess. And again, if you look into all these stories that take place in the communities, or stories that took place, the most painful of them, if you analyze them, there is this hasad, this jealousy which is hidden in it. Hasood is someone who is jealous. Mahsood is this person who we envy. Who we envy is mahsood, and the person who is jealous himself is hasood. Hasood's life, it's full of pain. He can never be happy because of the disease which he possesses, And he is always in flares. He burns in this jealousy of, in this jealousy, in this hatred. And God's mercy is eternal and unlimited on his created. But Hasood is constantly in azab, in chastisement. Although Allah's favors are there. But this Hasood, because he is wanting things that are with others, be seized away from them, be given to him. As a result of that, he's always in pain, always hurt. He can never be happy. Now, by this jealousy, this hasad which this individual has to that other person, it is not as such that he is harming that other person. He is harming himself. And also in addition to that, riwayat, ma'sumin, they say that by this hasad which this person has to that mahsud, all the good which he has done, it automatically transfers to that mahsud. All the evil of that mahsud is transferred to the hasid, to this person who is jealous. So again, that is another loss which he is sustaining, all because of that jealousy, that hasad. In Quran again, says قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ, and until the end of that, the last ayah says وَمِنْ شَرِّ حَاسِدٍ إِذَا حَسَدٍ, that is from the evil of that jealous when he starts jealousy, that is when he is in jealousy. And again, if you in one of these riwayat, in this tafsir of the same surah of this ayah, our sixth Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam, Imam says that, haven't you seen that person who is jealous, how he looks and gazes at the blessings that have been given to the to man by Allah? It is as if he wants to seize them away with his sights. That is jealous. So Quran says that we have to keep away from this jealousy, because Allah, it is him who by his grace gave all these blessings and graces to that individual. Imam says, Afatuddin al-hasad, that is, by this jealousy, if a person is a mu'min, he may lose his iman because of this jealousy, if he doesn't correct himself. Now, the Prophet, he says that every blessing has enemies. And he was asked, who are they? He replied, those who envy others for the favors bestowed on them by Allah, they are the enemies of these blessings. Or elsewhere in a hadith al-Qudsi, the Almighty says that hasid, that is that jealous, is the enemy of my favors, is displeased by my destiny, which is my distribution to my creation. So hasad, it's that disease which we have to put aside, if God forbid, if it exists in us. Or elsewhere, our sixth Imam, he says that usulul kufr thalatha, says that kufr, it has usul, it has fundamentals. What are they? Says hirs, greed, and istikbar, that is this oppression or pride, arrogance, wal hasad, jealousy. So usulul kufr thalatha, hirs, istikbar and hasad, that greed, arrogance and hasad, which is jealousy. So the other thing is that someone who is hasood, it was mentioned, he doesn't benefit anything at all. Al-hasood, la yasood. Aqallu an-nas lizzatan al-hasood. Hasood, this person who is jealous, he never benefits, he never enjoys anything because of that jealousy. Now, based upon the riwayat that we have, there is a checklist to see if these criteria of hasad are existing in us. I'll just quickly list them. says that the basic criteria in hasad is that what you love for yourself, you hate for others. And that what he wants for others, hates for himself. Now being clear from hasad, that is what you love for yourself, love for others too. So the first thing is that by seeing or hearing the joy, wealth, possession, job, beauty, car, belongings, etc. that are present in others, do you get upset? If you get upset, then that is the troubleshooting point. That means that hasad, it is alive in us and it needs to be corrected. Second is that when someone ill speaks about another person, do you quickly accept what he says? If you do that, it means that hasad, it is alive. It needs to be corrected. Or when one is praised, are you upset? If you know that one is worthy of praise, is it tough for you to accept? Someone known to be lower than you, if he takes heed, does it upset you? That is, if someone had a job, for example, and all of a sudden he gets a promotion, by his promotion, do you get upset? It means that there is this hasad which needs to be fixed. Do people know you as a fierce, as an angry person? Again, that means that hasad is alive. Do you praise in the presence of a few and talk behind their back? That again. Do you consider most of the people as ruthless and wrong? That is, it's only me who is good, everyone else is faulty. Are you pleased when others are afflicted and hurt? Now the pessimism of others and the ill talk behind them, do you inform them? That is, if someone comes and talks behind his back and I could not protect him there, do I come and notify him that this is what is happening behind your back? If you can go and fix it yourself. If I don't, it means that there's something wrong in me. I love that person to be negative in the community. Do you feel like avenging all the time? If that's the case, it means jealousy is there. Do you criticize and complain a lot? And does it bother you? That is always nagging. Are you known to be suspicious? Now all these were just brief tips that we found in riwayat regarding hasad. So hasad is one of those diseases that we have to correct if it exists in us. And again, correcting it, it was mentioned that all these different tips that we have, that we work on it for a few days. And riwayat, they say that if you work on it for 40 days, that again inshallah will be out of your system. Coming back to our topic on hidayat, which was guidance, Quran, it has many ayat that talk about hidayat. Among them is Suratul Asr, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Wal Asr, Innal Insana Lafi Khusr, Illa Alladhina Amanu Wa Amilu Salihat, Wa Tawasaw Bil Haqqi, Wa Tawasaw Bil Sabr. A small surah full of meaning. Most of the verses that were revealed in Mecca, they were for the spiritual uplift of an individual, self-building. Rules of self-educating were mentioned. Sometimes the program was mentioned in an ayah. Sometimes a surah was revealed to mention that program. And over here, one surah, that is Suratul Asr, which is believed to be sufficient to explain this complete program, was mentioned. Now this surah can be analyzed both in the light of a hadith and also in the light of nature. Asr means time. Reports, they say that it is that age, that time, that era of guidance. And I swear by that age of guidance, by that era of guidance, which guidance? That is the Prophet. That is the Almighty Allah. He manifested 124,000 prophets all of them in this one Rasul as the guidance, and gave him the final torch of guidance in his hand, so that through him mankind they are guided, and that ultimate guidance is provided to the Prophet. Now, we have to benefit from Rasulullah. Now, all these days, those ayat that were recited, that Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu istajibu lillahi walil rasul idha da'akum lima yuhyikum, that you have to respond to the call of Rasul. Why? Because by responding to the call of Rasulullah, it is you who will gain life. It is you who will live forever. It is you who will gain that prosperity. Before the Prophet, this program of guidance was incomplete. Now by Rasulullah, this program is perfected. It completes. Quran says, Al-yawm akmaltu lakum dinakum wa atmamtu alaykum ni'mati wa radhitu lakum al-islam deena. That is, it is by the Prophet, upon the Prophet, it ends and it perfects. Or for example, elsewhere says that innama anta munzirun wa likulli qawmin had, says that you are the warner, and every nation has someone to guide, and it is Rasul who guides to the right path. And many ayat, inna arsalnaka shahidan wa mubashshiran wa nadhira, that we have sent you as shahid, means a witness, mubashshiran, as someone who gives the good news, wa nadhiran, and a warner. وَلَسَوْفَ يُعْتِيكَ رَبُّكَ فَتَرْضَى, and for this guidance Allah says that whatsoever you want I will give you, so that you are pleased, that so that Rasul is pleased. So says Wal-Asr, that I swear by that time, that age, which is that age of guidance, and that is the guidance of Rasulullah, says إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَفِي خُسْرٍ, that is, the entire humanity, they are at loss. That is, along with the light of his guidance of Rasulullah, if you do not enlighten yourself, you are at loss. Innal insan lafi khusr. Innal insan means, indeed, the entire humanity at large, all of them are at loss. That is, if you don't accept this invitation of Rasulullah. Now, accepting the invitation of Rasulullah means what? Means ma ataakumur rasul fakhuzuh, whatsoever he said, do it. Whatsoever he said, don't do, don't do. Not that we sit and pick and choose and select some of the nice ahkam which are easy, adaptable for us, and leave aside all the others. That is not acceptable. Sometimes it is said that people are of two types. They say that we accept everything what Allah has said. Some say we don't accept anything. And there is a midway where they say that we'll take some and we'll leave others. That is, when it comes to prayers, we'll say our prayers behind Ali, because there is no one who says his prayers better than Ali. And when the food is laid, we'll eat it with Muawiyah, because his food and his table is much more colorful. That is not acceptable. We have to be totally adaptable to whatever Rasul says, not that pick and choose. That pick and choose is a danger zone. Whosoever steps into that danger zone, it is not guaranteed that he will be successful, especially at the time of death. Because all these attachments that we have, they play a negative role, especially when a person is giving away his life. And if, God forbid, he was not successful in submitting and dying on Iman, it means that is going to be an eternal devastation. Dying on Kufr, that is, live for such a long time, work in the midway, and then again die as Kafir, that is, sustaining a huge big loss. Says Wal Asr, I swear by that age, that period of guidance of Rasulullah, indeed, mankind at large is at loss because they did not enlighten themselves by this torch of guidance, which is Rasulullah, which is Ma'sumin, which are the A'imma alayhimus salam. A body is brought to Masjidun Nabi, placed before Rasulullah. He is invited. He said, "Ya Rasulullah, come and say the prayers on this body." He comes, says that it's that person which he sent yesterday with Amirul Mu'mineen. Says, "What happened? Why did you bring him? How did he die?" The people who brought the body, they say that you assigned us to a task, and we went to that village to carry out the task. Someone brought some food there, Amirul Mu'mineen. He said that don't eat it. It's harmful. It's poisonous. And this person, he said that, "Ali, do you have to have a say in everything?" He sat, he ate, he died. And this is his body, and we want you to say the prayers on him. Rasulullah steps back, says, "He hurt Ali, and you want me to say prayers on him? I won't. I will not." Message is given to Amirul Mu'mineen that Rasulullah has rejected to say the prayers on that body, for the reason that he says, because he has hurt Ali. Amirul Mu'mineen rushes all the way from that town to Medina, comes to Rasulullah and says, "Ya Rasulullah, I forgave him. You lead the prayers on him." So someone who has not enlightened himself, that is by this torch of guidance, which is Rasulullah, which is Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, that person, he is going to be at loss. Innal insana lafi khusr. And someone who until the end of his life does not enlighten his heart, mind, himself, with this light is at loss. And those who enlighten themselves with this light, they are safe. Quran says in Surah Al-Hadid that someone who has enlightened, يَوْمَ تَرَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتِ يَسْعَى نُورُهُمْ بَيْنَ أَيْدِيهِمْ وَبِأَيْمَانِهِمْ. Beautiful ayah. Says that those who possessed iman, iman means belief in Allah, belief in the prophethood, belief in the day of judgment. This is iman. Says someone who had faith in this iman, on the day of judgment, because of this iman which they possess, they will find their way out in the hereafter. That is mu'mineen, they will possess a light. That light, it is as if it will navigate them, take them to their destination, and which is the heaven. A GPS, and that is this iman. So يَوْمَ تَرَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتِ, that is, as a result of that iman, they will find their way out. With reference to the day of judgment, with reference to mahshar, it's a day of horror. It's a day of destruction. Look into these surahs in the end of Quran. All of them talk about the horror of the day of judgment. Says, but mu'mineen, they will be safe. For mu'mineen says, bushraakumul yawm. Good news to you. You will be safe. You will be safe because of this iman, because you enlightened yourself, and that is, you taught yourself, educated yourself with the teachings of Rasulullah. Again, with reference to the horror of the day of judgment, Quran says that يَجْعَلُ الْوِلْدَانَ شَيْبًا. The horror is such that a two-year-old child, upon seeing the horror, he will become a hunched old man with white hair, because of that devastation, that horror is such. Again, riwayat, they say that the horror is such that Prophet Ibrahim would say that, Rabbi nafsi nafsi ana khaliluka Ibrahim, that God have mercy on me first, I am your friend Ibrahim, upon seeing that horror of the day of judgment. So mahshar, which can make a child old, whiten his hair, hunch him to those, but those who possess this faith and iman says, don't worry, bushraakum al-yawm, for you is the good news. Now value of mind of man without this light, is there any value? he's worthless. Someone who is a human being, does not possess this light, did not enlighten himself in accordance to the teachings of the Prophet, is worthless. Or what we see today, what is taught today by all these theories that they have, that there is no difference between man and monkey and everything just came into existence with a big bang, it is degrading human being from that lofty position which Allah has created, bringing him low down. They say that man has been created to fill his belly, to live, and then to multiply. There's no other reason behind his creation. Now, if you analyze this theory, it is as if swearing at God, God forbid, that Allah, he created man with that big aim. What is that? Illa liya'budun. Ma khalaqtul jinna wal ins illa liya'budun. That I've created man and jinn for the sake of servitude, for the sake of worship. And now someone who brings man from that lofty position, brings him so low and says that there is no difference between man and monkey, then the monkey used to climb the trees and man now he flies. That's the only difference. Now that is degrading human being. An Arif with his students, he was standing in one of the farms in Naishabur. And there in the olden days, they had these septic tanks wherein the human waste was being collected. And after a certain duration of time, they used to come and empty these septic tanks and use them as manure for the farms, mix it with sand and use it. Says that this Arif, he was standing there with his students, and because of that bad smell, the students, they couldn't stand. They covered their nose and left that place. Now this mentor, the teacher, he also wanted to do the same, but he did not. He stood there, cried for half an hour. And then the student says, "Say, Ustad, what happened? Why do you cry?" He says that you covered your nose and you went away. I also wanted to do the same thing because of this bad smell over here. But the moment I intended to cover my nose, this manure, it started to talk to me, saying that, why do you want to cover your face? Why do you want to cover your nose? Now, you are a different person. After all, you are the Ustad. And they communicate to this mentor, saying that we were not at fault. We just associated with this human being for a few hours, and this is our result. This is the end, that we become feces. And then says, 4-5 hours ago, we also were good fruit, good vegetables, all this meat, all these canned food, everything which was displayed so beautifully in all these shelves, we associated with human beings, and this was the end. So man has to be careful that just a few hours associating with humans, and that was the end. So guidance plays an important part. Innal insana lafi khusr, that indeed mankind is at loss. Why is at loss? Because not associating with the Prophet, not enlightening with the nur, with the teachings, with the education of the Prophet. The Prophet says that إِنَّ الْحُسَيْنِ مِصْبَاحُ الْهُدَى وَسَفِينَةُ النَّجَاةِ, that Hussein is the torch of guidance. سَفِينَةُ النَّجَاةِ, he is the ark of salvation. In this entire creation of Allah, there is no being stronger than Abu Abdullah in guidance. No matter what conversion, embracing, or guidance we see, we find that Abu Abdullah plays a role somewhere in the guidance of an individual. That is why we are said that we have to give a lot of importance to a majlis which is held for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. Because everyone benefits from that majlis. It's 1372 years these majalis are being held worldwide in so many languages. So much of benefit has been provided, and all of that, it goes to, the credit of it goes to Aba Abdullah al-Hussein. Innal Hussein Misbahul Huda. He is the torch of guidance. After the tragedy of Karbala, when the heads of the Shuhada were to be taken from Karbala to Sham, they distributed the heads to a few people. The head of Aba Abdullah with the head of some of his ashab were given to a group of 50 soldiers, and they were to carry this noble head. They say that it was a routine in those days when this assignment was given to us, that at the time of sunset, we placed that trunk wherein the head of Aba Abdullah was placed, and we sat around it, all 50 men. We got drunk. We intoxicated until the morning, and in the morning again we continued with this journey. Now one of those soldiers, he says that one night I did not get drunk. 49 soldiers, they were drunk. And all of a sudden I see that from the skies a door opens. One after the other, all the prophets, they come down and they congregate around this trunk wherein the head of Aba Abdullah is kept. Quoting from Luhuf, Fi Qatla Tufuf, written by Marhum Tusi, Sayyid ibn Taus. There he says that the prophets, they congregate, and the prophet himself is over there, and one after the other, all of them, they come and extend there. Extend their condolence to Rasulullah on the martyrdom of Aba Abdullah. That was what this person, he sees for himself. All the way through from Karbala to Sham, this guidance continued. Aba Abdullah Hussein, when he is born, the baby is given to the Prophet. And Rasulullah, he cries a lot. The mother, she gets upset that, is there anything wrong with the baby that makes you cry? And there he says that Jibreel just revealed to me the afflictions, the tragedies that will unfold on this baby, which is Hussein. And they all cry. The first person to mourn for Aba Abdullah is Jibreel. The first reciter of Masa'ib for Aba Abdullah is Jibreel. And there he brings some sand, earth of Karbala, gives it to the Prophet. And in one of the meetings, Prophet, he speaks to Salama and gives the sand to her and says that the day you find that the sand turns into blood, that is the day when my son Hussein has been martyred. Aba Abdullah, he sets off from Medina to Mecca, from Mecca to Karbala, and it took many, many months for him to come and land at Karbala. And the day when they come and reach Karbala, Imam was passing by the land and asks the people over there, what is the name of this place? They say Shattul Farat. Imam says, is there any other name? They say Karbala. Then Imam says, this is our destination, we have to set down. Umbe Kulsum, she cries, she says that, I don't feel relaxed over here, it's not safe, I think. And then again, when we normally get to our destinations, we are happy, we are relaxed. They've come to their destination, but it's a start of distress. It's a start of masa'ib there. In another report, a person, he says that we've come to this land which is known as karbun wa bala. Karb means afflictions. Bala means tests. A land which is full of tests. A land which is full of pain. They come, they land in Karbala. Imam, he buys a piece of land in that place, gives 60,000 dirhams to the people over there, and says that this is where we will be buried, and I want you to host everyone who comes to this land for 3 days. So that arrangement also was made by Imam. If you look back into the history of the time of Prophet Ibrahim, he is instructed to go and kill his son Ismail, for whom he longed. And after a long time, he was blessed with the son. When Prophet Ibrahim carries out the instructions, a beautiful son, he says, "Father, whatsoever you are instructed, do it." Brings his son to that place to be slaughtered. The knife, it wouldn't work, it wouldn't cut. He tries all his best, it doesn't cut. Prophet Ibrahim, he hits the knife onto a rock, and there the knife starts to speak. Says, "Al-Khalil ya'murni wal-Jalil yanhani." Says, "Khalil," which is Prophet Ibrahim, instructs me to cut, but Jalil, which is the existence of Allah, yanhani, does not allow me to cut. Why is that? Because Ismail has to remain so that Hussein is born from the progeny of Ismail, and this sacrifice to the maximum and the best of sacrifices has to be given only by Hussein. With reference to the land of Karbala, we find that this place where Abu Abdullah is buried, for it to be availed, for him to be buried over there, 200 prophets were killed. 200 of their children were killed over there, and that land was irrigated with the blood of all these noble prophets, so that it is prepared to accept the sacrifice of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. On the day of Ashura, when Abu Abdullah fell to the ground, his body is soaked in his blood, Zuljanah, this loyal horse of Abu Abdullah, comes and dips his forehead in the blood of his master, that is the Imam. Umar al-Sa'd, he sees the scene and instructs his men to catch that horse, because he was among the best of the horses of the Prophet. They tried to hold him, cannot hold him, and then gets enraged, fierce, and kills more than about 40 men of Umar al-Sa'd. And then Umar al-Sa'd yells and says, "Leave it, let's see what it does." This animal comes, dips his head again in the blood of Abu Abdullah. The reins of this animal again, they are dipped in the blood of Abu Abdullah, and then the horse starts crying. What is that? Says, "Az-zalimatu zalima min ummatin qatalat ibnu bint Rasulullah." That is affliction, affliction, pity, pity. And that is, by spreading the dust, says that shame on a nation that killed the son of Rasulullah. That even that animal could say that. This ziyarat nahiyat al-muqaddasa, there says that when they see that this horse is in this status, kharajna min al-khudur nashirat al-shu'ur, that the women, these rush out of the camps towards the battlefront with their ori and hitting their faces, لِلْوُجُوهِ صَافِرَاتِ وَبِالْعَوِينِ دَعْيَاتِ, With reference to the ziyarat that we have for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, they too are amazing. For example, when it comes to Rasulullah, we say these ziyarat, we say that As-salamu alayka ya Rasulullah, salam be upon you, O Rasulullah. But for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, it's different. We say that Ya Abu Abdullah, salam be upon you. We say salam be upon that throat of Abu Abdullah. Salam be upon the severed veins of Abu Abdullah. Salam be upon the blood which gushed out of his throat of Abu Abdullah. Salam be upon that blood which fell to the ground. Salam be upon that blood which was soaked, which was wiped on his face. Salam be on that beard of Abu Abdullah, which was soaked, which was tied in his blood. Ala la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimeen wa say'alamu al-lazina zalamu ayyamun qalabin yanqalibu. Allahumma aghfir lana wal-walidayna وَلِمَنْ وَجَبَ لَهُ حَقٌّ عَلَيْنَا وَلِمَنْ وَسَّانَا بِالدُّعَاءِ وَلِجَمِيعِ أُمَّةِ مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِ مُحَمَّدٍ. ماتم حسین.